Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Dave. I am your intrepid host as we navigate the waters of student ministry and parenting and all things teenage and student ministry and family ministry right here from headquarters at the Think Orange bunker. Now, again, Ashley is not with us. I'm starting to get a complex. I'm not going to lie, but we can talk to her about that when she gets back. So for this episode, I've actually just said, you know what, Kevin always interjects. So why don't I just stop him from trying to sneak into the bunker while I'm not looking and just invite him in. So I am sitting across the table from our one and only amazing producer, Kevin Jennings. How are you today, Kevin?
Dave, thank you. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to no longer be the pest who interrupts such great conversations.
I'm just trying to protect and save your marriage. That's all I'm
actually,
trying to
I'm do. Excited for my wife to listen to this episode because she does listen to the podcast. And when she does, she will hear that that was Dave's idea, honey. He invited me on and I just said thank you for the invitation.
I love that I'm coming in with some energy and you're just super cool. Like super mellow.
It's about time. You know, those who know me know I'm a pretty excitable guy. If you listen to the episode when interjected with you and Stuart Hall,
yeah,
I was talking with so much energy and I was talking so fast. Leah, my wife, nudged me and said, "That's how you sound sometimes." It's like, oh my gosh. I didn't even know. I literally sound like I'm speaking another language.
Well, people think I'm speaking another language anyway, Kevin.
So today, you won't understand anything in this podcast. Welcome to this podcast.
So good. Hey, today we're going to be talking about, I love this title, Why Every Kid Needs Five Adults. And it's this whole idea of tribes. I wanted to ask you, Kevin, when you were growing up, do you remember what tribe you belonged to?
You know, it's funny because I've actually asked myself that before. I try to see when I ask someone, tell me what you are. And they say, I am. Whatever they say next is real interesting, right? Do they say Christian first? Do they say American first? Do they say man first? Do they say husband first?
Yeah.
Because it's always interesting to see how someone views themselves in priority order.
Because how they identify determines the tribe they belong to, right?
Absolutely. I mean, right. Yeah. The answer to that question says a lot about how you view yourself and where you belong.
Yeah. And this is what really the episode is about this sense of belonging, the importance of the fact that every student, every kid wants to belong somewhere, and then how we as parents or we as student ministry leaders can help them belong by introducing them to five adults who can give them that sense of belonging, right?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's even more than even introducing, it's not just acknowledging that they might already be there.
Yeah, that's so true. That's such a good principle to bring up. And so today we're going to be hearing from who, Kevin? Can you do the whole introduction part here?
Well, I'll give it a shot. And please help me do it well. I'm struggling.
I'll step in.
Thanks, buddy. Well, yeah, today we're going to hear from my boss, the leader and founder of Orange, Reggie Joyner. He, formerly known as Reggie Woo, if you go back to episode zero of this podcast, you'll hear the story about how Reggie Woo stepped in to get some folks here, I think Ashley, to the team. But with that being said, so Reggie's going to talk to us about this idea of what it means to give kids tribes over time. Yeah. What it means to step in and say, if I can create a safe place or a community around a kid, but not just temporarily, but over time, what that does for them. Yeah. And then Kristen's going to talk about how we go about doing it.
So now, who is Kristen?
Yeah, so Kristen Ivey, she is the executive director of messaging here at Orange. You might remember her from episode 4 of this podcast, or if you are listening more recently to some of our phase-based episodes, you remember her from episode 16 of the podcast, where we talk about every phase of a kid's life and how it matters. Well, she's back, and she's going to talk about this concept that Dave just mentioned a moment ago about giving every kid five adults, and really how that connects to the idea of a practical, simple way we can start creating community and tribes in our kids' lives.
Now, I know that if you're listening to this and you're a student ministry leader, if you're a youth pastor, if you're a student pastor, whatever level you're at in church, or whether you're a parent, you're going to get so much out of this episode. I don't know how it was for you, Kevin, but as a dad, my gosh, I got so much out of the wisdom that Kristen had to share about introducing these five people, these five adults into your child's life, and then celebrating them and creating opportunities. Because I think you're a dad, you know this. I think as parents, sometimes we want to be the most influential person in our child's life, but we have to get to a point where we release some of that, right?
That's absolutely right. You and I have talked before in the podcast about this idea of de-escalating influence,
yeah.
Right? That for me, my child's only 2 years old, so I have about as much influence as I'm ever going to have. Yes. And that actually makes me want to cry because she ignores me already. She's only two. So if this is as good as it gets, I have a tough time ahead of me. I'm like, Arden.
So
with that being said, I think you're totally right. Yeah. She's right. And so I think that's the point of today's episode is we really want to start to arm you with leaders. We talk about engaging families and partnering with parents. Well, there's something that's going to be really practical that I think you'll get out of this conversation with Kristen that will empower you to start to give something you can tell parents when they're thinking about what do I do when my kid won't listen, or what do I do to help my kid be surrounded by the right influences in critical times of their lives, whether it be middle school, high school, elementary school, even preschool.
Yeah, because it works across a whole bunch of different phases.
Absolutely.
And you know, I say that because today's episode is actually brought to you by Just a Phase. So
Segway.
Don't miss it. That's
my
big. It's all in the transition.
I love it.
It's all in the curves and not letting people fall out of the car as we go around a bend. Okay, that's called the transition. So today's episode is brought to you by It's Just a Phase, So Don't Miss It, which is a book written to help you understand, celebrate, and navigate each phase in a kid's life, from whining infant, which is, I guess, where you're at.
Toddler.
Right?
Whining toddler.
To stressed out teen, which is where I'm at. So we can both connect with this phase material straight away. Orange, basically, the authors really want to inspire you to embrace every phase in a child's life as an opportunity to influence their future. You can learn more about this book at justaphase.com. I know, Kevin, I don't know if you've read some of this stuff, but I have read it. Like, and it is just an incredible how-to practical resource. It's almost like a cookbook for parenting. It's almost like a cookbook for leading students and leading kids. Have you read any of it at all?
I actually have, and there's some pieces of it that are really powerful. And actually, I started reading it before I had a child, and before I was like, "Oh, this is just so fascinating stuff." And now I'm going back to it with new eyes.
So now it's all dog-eared, and it's like notes all over every single page.
And it's compelling, and also it's inspiring because at the end of the day, we're not talking about trying to control your child.
Yeah.
Right. We know they're a human being. You're raising an adult.
Yeah.
As I've heard Reggie say multiple times, you're not raising kids, you're raising adults.
Totally.
And so with that being said, you need the principles you need the practices that can help you create a better environment so that your child can succeed and have a lasting faith.
So you can get the It's Just a Phase, So Don't Miss It book simply by going to justaphase.com, Just a Phase, PHASE, justaphase.com. They are the great sponsors of today's episode. So we're going to kick this off by sharing an 12 minute clip from Reggie Joiner. So much amazing good stuff in here about what it means to be in a tribe and establish tribes over time. And then we're going to hear my interview with Kristen Ivy, and she's going to give us some practical tools that we need as student ministry leaders and as parents on how we can establish those tribes for our kids. So take it away, Reggie.
Have you ever noticed how we all have a drive to belong? You could say that belonging is the reason that people take showers. Synchronized swimming has fans. Men stopped wearing leisure suits in the 70s, and Tom Hanks apologized to a soccer ball named Wilson. The point is, we all have a desire to fit in somewhere, to be connected, to find our place at someone's table. One of the reasons you can tell that belonging is such a powerful drive in the human heart is because not belonging can be devastating. Especially if the loneliness is consistent, the isolation is frequent, the rejection is recurrent. The point is, people need people. Everybody needs a circle, and every kid especially needs what we might call is a tribe. So what exactly is a tribe? Well, there are probably a lot of definitions, but for us, it's simply a group of people connected by something in common. Ancestry, ideas, experience, politics, theology, sports. Think about it this way. We define ourselves by tribes. We say things like, I am a musician, a Baptist, a feminist, Braves fan, photographer, foodie, conservative, mom, student, biker, Republican, reader, blogger. Tribes are just people who share something in common, kind of like a club you can sign up for. But when someone finds a tribe over time, the role a tribe plays in their life becomes much more significant. The tribe can have the potential to become like a family or community. That's why what you do every week matters so much. As a parent or a leader, when you help kids feel welcome in a tribe over time, you're helping them develop a significant sense of belonging. That's why what you do every week matters so much. As a parent or leader, when you help kids feel welcomed in a tribe over time, you're helping them develop a significant sense of belonging. That's another reason we wrote this book, Losing Your Marbles, Playing for Keeps, because we actually wanted to create a guide for two of the most important tribes that we believe exist, the church and the family. Just like love, words, and stories were God's idea, so were tribes. Think about it. It's as if God designed us so we would naturally connect in tribes. Then he used tribes over time to reveal himself to us and to continue to spread his message of love. God used tribes, if you think about the story of the Bible, to accomplish his mission, to invite more people into a tribe of faith by trusting in his son and the message of the gospel story. But it's possible to misunderstand the very point of tribes. For example, the Pharisees missed the point. Although in some ways they attempted to champion the practices and traditions of the tribe of faith, they somehow missed this point that God designed tribes to be inclusive, not exclusive. Tribes provide an opportunity to make people feel welcomed, accepted, and even loved by God. While the Pharisees seemed intent to make it hard to get into their tribe of faith, when Jesus showed up, he started inviting everyone and anyone to get in. One day, he actually confronted the Pharisees about their judgmental way of thinking. He told a story about a father with two sons. I'm sure you've heard it. The youngest son left home prematurely. He took his father's inheritance and went into the far country where he hoped to build his fortune and find new friends and leave his mark in the world. Unfortunately, due to a series of wrong decisions and the fact that he had never taken any of Dave Ramsey's financial courses, he lost his money and everything. Rumor even has it that he ended up working at a barbecue place in South Georgia. Actually, it was a little worse than that. He had to live out back with the pigs. I'm sure you've heard the story about how he finally said one day, "Let me go home. I've had my run, baby. I'm done. I got to go home." I may actually be getting that mixed up with a Michael Bublé song, but I can imagine the prodigal son walking over that final hill, looking down the road at the big white house where he grew up. At least in my mind, it was a big white house. His loving father runs to meet him and gives him a hug in spite of his odor, in spite of his mistakes. Why? Because according to his dad, "My son was lost, now he's found." Translated, "My son lost his way, now he's back where he belongs." You see, he was a smart dad who knew that tribes matter. So he did two things. He gave his son a ring to remind him that he still belonged to the family, and he threw a party to assure him that he still had a community where he belonged. He wanted to send a clear message. There's still a seat for you at our table. This is a place where you are known, where you are welcome, where you are forgiven, where you belong. That kind of belonging is something that only tribes can do. And the tribes most strategically positioned to do that are the family and the church. Kids and teenagers desperately need people who know them, who welcome them, and who forgive them over time so that they will know they belong. Education reformer Jeffrey Canada says that kids need to grow up with a certain level of failure so they can understand it's possible to move beyond their mistakes. But they also need to know they can be forgiven, both by their parents and by other adults as well. Canada says this is what makes those in the church unique. We understand redemption. So that's what a tribe of faith should be best at doing, reminding kids that they are forgiven by God and by the people who know them best. Isn't it true that we all want to be known by someone? And we need to know, regardless of whatever failure we have in our life, they still believe in us and that we still have a place to belong. You see, this idea of belonging is actually what makes our faith as Christians distinctive. Our sense of belonging is rooted in a concept we all know called grace. Grace means that you don't belong because you deserve to belong. You belong because God has accepted you and because God has forgiven you. Think about the advantage of growing up realizing that you were known by God in a way you were not known by anyone. Every thought, every desire, every action. And yet God wants to welcome you into his tribe forever. You see, that's belonging. Remember when we said what happens in a kid's life may be more important than what happens in their life as an adult? This is why it's so crucial to introduce children and teenagers to the grace of God when they're young. That's why helping them understand how to trust Christ with their life should be one of our first priorities. It may be the greatest thing you do for a kid's sense of belonging. At some point, most of us have experienced what happens when someone grows up and never feels like they belong. When Debbie and I met Alyssa a few years ago, she convinced us that she needed a heart transplant. But it was actually a scam. It wasn't a scam for money because she never asked us for money. It was really a scam for attention. She played this game most of her young life to impress someone, to belong somewhere, and her history was filled with fictions she told in an attempt to earn acceptance. Well, it took a little over a year before she got caught and her lie was exposed. At that point, she cut everyone off. And at 22 years of age, she failed at the first attempt to take her life. Debbie and I waited at Elmhurst Hospital for 2 days before she would agree to see us. And when she did, she was angry. Her first words were, "I don't want you here. Why did you come? I really don't want to talk about anything." It actually took a few days before she warmed up. I'm not sure if it was the chocolate we brought or the fact that she was just tired of the crowd of the psych ward. But after a few visits, she asked us this question. "Why would you come back when you know what I did?" So I said, "Alyssa, the reason we came back is because we know what you did. And sometimes you just need someone in your life who knows you and who knows what you did, but they just keep showing up anyway. I mean, I need that. I need to be loved by the people who have history with me. Or how can I know I'm really loved, right?" You see, we had enough history with her to know that beneath the facade and pretense, there was this smart, savvy, creative, ambitious, daring, lively, sarcastic girl who was the age of our own daughters. I don't know, maybe that's what we saw. She was someone's daughter who had been trapped in her life by a string of bad choices while she was trying to figure out where and how to belong. Alyssa was not that different than you or me. She just needed tribes over time where she could be known and forgiven in spite of what she had done. Just remember this. You can't feel forgiven by people who don't really know you. That's why kids need tribes over time. They need people who have history with them, people who know them. You see, kids need to be known before they can feel welcome. And kids need to be known before they can feel forgiven. And kids need to be known before they can feel like they belong. So when they show up broken and lonely and wounded, your job is to make sure they know they have a seat at your table, to be the kind of parent or leader who will give them a ring and throw them a party. Because there are two things, I promise you, that will make your home and church attractive to kids and teenagers. You know what they are? Forgiveness and joy. That's why you need to play for keeps with every week that passes, with every marble you lose. Remember, you're making history. Playing for keeps means you get serious about tribes over time and you understand how the right tribe over time contributes to a child's sense of belonging. That's why we say it's important to go in circles. That may sound a little strange, but it's just another way of saying do life in the context of relationships. Because kids need to be encouraged early in life to connect in tribes and groups. It means that you recognize the potential of your family circle, your church circle, and the influence the right kind of friends can have in their life. In other words, kids need to eat in circles, travel in circles, play in circles, work in circles, learn in circles, and live in circles. It just makes a difference when kids have the right kind of relational circles and the right kind of tribe. It stacks the odds in their favor when they grow up with a sense that they are known, that they are welcomed, and that they are forgiven over time. It increases their emotional and spiritual health. So, keep doing what you're doing this week because it matters. Every time you show up to be physically present in a kid's life, you're making a unique statement by being there with them and being there for them. It's like you're saying, no matter what you do, no matter what happens, you will always belong here. There will always be a seat at the table for you. You will always have a tribe.
Well, hey, everyone. We are here with the wonderful Kristen Ivey. Kristen, I'm so glad that you are here in our rolling Think Orange podcast bunker.
This is great. Austin, Texas.
We put this thing on wheels and we got it here somewhere, right? This is absolutely amazing. I don't know how we did it, but we did it. That's because of our wonderful producer, Kevin. Hey, Kristen, you are the executive director of messaging.
Yes.
I like what you said just before. Words, not numbers.
Words, not numbers.
You're not good with numbers.
Not a bit.
That's
the difference
awesome.
Between 5 and 50 and 5,000 pretty much all sounds like fives to me.
That's hilarious. But you're also the host of the Parent Q podcast.
Yes.
We need to give that a plug.
Yeah. I love getting to have conversations with people who are parents, trying to figure out the journey of parenthood. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So today I wanted to talk to you about the importance of significant relationships when it comes to either leading or raising kids.
Yeah.
How important is that?
Oh my goodness, it's super important. In fact, it may be one of the most important things. I don't know how to overemphasize the importance. Our need for relationships is so deep
yep.
in us. If you read pretty much any psychology, sociology, anything in the liberal arts fields of study,
yep.
It will all point back to the significance of feeling connected on a deeper level to other people and what that does to our lives.
Now, I know that you've done and you've also read a whole bunch of research from some great institutes. What was the outcome of that research?
You know, we tried to focus on what are the things that kids need most to help prioritize for
yep.
any parent or leader. You have so many different influences that are leaning into you as a parent to say it's really important that you make sure that your kid eats healthy food, that they get a really good education, that they get into the right college, that they have a marketable skill. There's all these different things you're supposed to be worried about as a parent. But we wanted to kind of focus in on, okay, what are the things that matter most if you had to prioritize?
Yeah.
And one of those that we identified really was this idea that you're talking about with belonging.
Yeah.
And so we say every kid needs a tribe, which is our way of just saying they need somewhere that they say, okay, I belong here. I'm
yeah.
accepted here. My identity, not that our identity comes from it, but it's a crucial part of our identity that we know who we belong to. We know
yeah.
who we belong with. And you can actually study this in a lot of different scenarios. This, I think what's fascinating for our faith in particular
yep.
is what we discover when we read the Old Testament and what God chose to do as he was bringing his story to light to us. In other words, God was God of the universe, created everything. So as soon as the fall happened, he could have just stepped in and been like, okay, guys, I know how to fix this. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to send Jesus right now. I'll save like the two of you and you'll be done.
Mm.
You know, you can fix it real quick. But he didn't. He chose to build a tribe.
Mm.
And he built the people and a nation and a tribe of people. And he gave them a code of conduct to say, live like this so that you'll know where you belong. You'll belong with the people who eat like this. You'll belong with the people who do this and don't do that. And as he formed their identity, he connected that identity to himself and
yeah.
the kind of love that he had for them. And he proved over time through a tribe his love for humanity.
Wow.
And I think in the same way for us, actually, it's similar in the way that we want to influence a kid, that we can connect them to a tribe like the church and say, you know, in the Old Testament stories, they always say, I believe in the God of Jacob, the God of, you know,
Isaac yeah.
you know, and
Abraham.
For us, you might point back to your history and go, actually, I believe in the God of Kristen, or I believe in the God of Joseph. I believe in the God of, you know, whoever it was that
yeah.
was a leader in your life that showed you what it meant to belong to this family.
Wow, that is awesome. I love that idea because I think we don't naturally think that way. And I like what you picked up. You said that there's so many pressures on us, especially like I'm a dad. There's pressure like, right, you know, my kids are teenagers at the moment. So are they eating right? Are they getting into the right college? Are they getting the right grades? Are they on social media too much? Like all of that stuff
right,
comes in.
Right.
And we see the value of the tribe that they belong to. But how can I as a parent influence the people that my kids are hanging out with or the people who my kids are influenced by?
Yeah, gosh. I think that's one of the biggest questions for any parent, right? That you want to have influence in that tribe because you know how formative that really is going to be. That's where their influences happen. It was interesting to me that you brought up social media in that context, like as one and the same. We just naturally know that to be connected in a tribe in this world means something about technology.
Yeah.
And what is that relationship? I feel like we're all trying to figure out you know, how can we help kids who are so hyper connected actually have a deep and meaningful relationship with people who know them?
Yeah.
And I think there's something related to all of this when it comes to a tribe and belonging, that although we can be, we can get to know people online, we don't ever feel like that's our people that we belong to or belong with, or that shapes our identity in the same way. And I know you're actually like social media expert, so step in here and go, actually, no, you're totally wrong, and that's a
healthy dissent is very important. Right. I see both things playing out. Like, I totally agree that social media can enhance a relationship that already exists.
Right.
Like 2D can help enhance 3D.
Right.
But also at the same time, you know, I'm not from America. I'm from Australia. My kids moved over here when my eldest daughter was seven. But one of her best friends in the whole world is a girl that she grew up with for those 7 years in Australia, who she only connects with on social media.
Right.
And when we say, how come you're so close to her? Oh, because we like each other's posts over and over. So there is a connection there that, you know, is real.
Right.
But I think it's because it started in 3D world.
Because it started in the real life.
Yeah.
And because there was a level of trust and vulnerability somewhere beneath it.
Yes.
I think one of the questions that that we have to keep in mind and wrestle with are the relationships that they're having, whether that's online or offline, are they authentic enough to really be helpful in forming that identity? Because one thing about a tribe is, in order for it to be a helpful tribe, it needs to be a group of people that see you as you really are and that really know you. They know who you are, you know, on your good days, bad days, when you're vulnerable, when you're, you know, killing it, awesome, best day ever, hair day is going great. I mean, all the things, but it's your tribe are the people who really can be close to you and know you.
Yeah, I think what I love in what you just said is the word vulnerability. Mm-hmm. That's what it's really all about, right? We have to be vulnerable. I know I just finished reading the new Brené Brown book, Braving the Wilderness, and she talks about this idea of belonging a lot. And she tells a story about how for her, there was a point where she realized she didn't belong in her own family. And so that became a topic of conversation around our dining room table, because I asked the girls, is there a place where you feel like you belong? How do I, and thankfully I'm going to round that story off. Thankfully they said yes, that they feel like they belong at home and they feel like they belong at church, which I was thrilled about. But as a dad, how can I make my daughters feel like they belong?
I think the fact that you asked that question is amazing. I mean, I would pause with that and go, I hope that we can all, especially as our kids get a little bit older and they're able to respond to that question, maybe don't ask a second grader. You know, they might not know what to, they'd be like, why are you kicking me out? But with an older kid, I think that's incredible, because they can begin to point to the things that are important to them about your family. As our kids get older, they want more influence in shaping who our families are and the things that are important to them. I think older kids are really good at pointing out, like, hey, these traditions we don't actually care about, so we can stop doing them now. We only do that to satisfy you, mom or dad, to create a picture that you're still holding on to, versus, hey, like, here's a tradition that you might not know is important to me. So giving older kids, I think, a voice around the table to say, who should our family be?
Now, what about the church leader, the student ministry leader who's listening to this podcast right now? How can they foster that sense of belonging to the kids that they see, you know, maybe only for an hour every Sunday?
This is the biggest work of the church, I think. Sometimes if you're a children's pastor or a youth pastor, you feel the weight of being responsible for every child in your ministry, when that's like 200 kids, 300 kids, I don't know how, I mean, whatever the size of your ministry. But most research will say that we can only have the kind of meaningful relationship that we're talking about with about seven people.
Okay.
So if you have a ministry that's over seven kids, you have got to diversify. You've got to take the weight of ministry and the responsibility of ministry and recruit other leaders and give it away. God didn't call you to be the only church. There's a lot of other people that God's wanting to use in the lives of kids and teenagers. And so it's on us as church leaders to give ministry away to other adults, recruit other adults. And the biggest work you can do for kids and teenagers may be in identifying other adults who can do this work, because it's too big for us to try to be the savior of the next generation all by ourselves.
Yeah.
We can have those meaningful relationships, that tribe kind of relationship with just a few.
Yeah.
And so at Orange, we say all the time, you can do more for a few.
Yeah.
Because we really believe your work is in the few who really know you, feel known by you. And so we think we would say recruit consistent leaders in the lives of kids.
Yeah.
I mean, unapologetically, it's harder. Is it harder work? Yes. Is it messier work? Yes. Is it going to be a long road? I mean, it's not an easy fix. It doesn't have a lot of glamour attached to it. But if you recruit consistent voices in the lives of kids, you are helping every parent win. You're helping every kid win because you're saying, okay, I'm going to put this person and connect them to you week after week after week so that you have someone in your life that you can turn to and run to.
In that sense, do churches have a better advantage over a school? Because, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, the average school classroom is probably 22 people, right? 22 kids and one teacher. Is there an advantage that the church has that the school system doesn't have?
That's an interesting question. I was a public school teacher, so I love teachers. My heart is there. I think some of the best humans on the planet work in public schools.
Amen.
So I like not to discredit schools. One thing that I do think the church has as an advantage is that in the school system, your job is to measure a kid's performance on something, whether they're learning their math, whether they're learning their reading, language arts, science, whatever it is. So one of the primary reasons you exist in that kid's life is to measure their retention of knowledge or, you know, their progression on a certain thing. In the church, we have this unique position that we can exist simply to give a kid acceptance and belonging and love and point them to a creator. So the motive behind it or the purpose behind it is different, and it does give the church an advantage. But I also say that to go, there are also some teachers who may end up being a child's greatest influence in their life. So
totally. That's my story. When you say, you know, the God of Kristen, the God of Kevin, the God of Dave, that's which is a concept that I love, and I'm going to circle back to that. I instantly think, who are the influence in my life? And it's a teacher comes to mind, my year 11 English teacher. She's the first person that pops into my head. So they're like, I agree. Teachers are absolutely remarkable.
And they have this ability. One of the things that I would also say might be an advantage of the school is that you live in the same environment every single day of the week. And you are surrounded with those kids. You know them in a way that, you know, I'm not always sure that we realize how well teachers know our children sometimes. So they can be incredible, incredible influences in our kids' lives.
So from the research that you've seen and looked at, and again, this is circling back to that idea of the God of Jacob and Isaac and Abraham. Is there a number that like a number of special people that a kid should have in their life?
Yeah, so a lot of institutions out there like Fuller or Baylor and others would say that when they looked at kids who stuck with the church after graduation, so college students who were still connected to church communities and into their early adult years, they were typically students who had had five or more influences in their world, where they would say, if I look back across my childhood and teen years, these kids would say, there were at least five adults who I knew loved God, they were in the family of faith, and they cared about me. They know my name. And when they could list those five adults, it something about that made them feel like they belong in the family of God and at church, and they wanted to stay connected there.
Yeah. So we should be, as parents and as leaders, we should be looking for five people.
Yeah, actually, so one of us, I've seen some parents do incredible things with this. One was a single mom who realized early on that her kids were going to need other adults in their lives. And so she bought one of those picture frames, you know, where you have multiple pictures.
Yeah.
So she had read this study and out of Fuller and went, okay, I'm going to find one that has five pictures in it. And every year she would identify five adults with her kid. They would have the conversation, who do you feel most connected to now? She would put their pictures and just keep it in her kid's room to go, these are five adults that we've named together that we know are invested in your life. And she would pray for them. Actually, in the phase guides that we just released, we kind of took some of that idea to challenge every parent. What if every year you just wrote down, even if it's three this year, you know, or how who are the adults who are most connected to your kid, have the most opportunity to influence. In the guides, we pointed out places you might want to look, whether in the early years that might be grandparents or neighbors or a parent's best friend. As kids get older, you're looking at sports coaches, you're looking at teachers and educators in the classroom, counselors, church volunteers. And if you can name those together and then go to that person and say, hey, my kid said that you are influential in their life, and I just want to thank you. I mean, give them a gift card to Starbucks. I mean, show gratitude to say, hey, your relationship with my kid is something I am cheering on because they need you, and I want to support that. And would you please continue to be invested in my kid?
Kristen, I just wrote that down, that idea of the picture frame of five photos, because, you know, again, as a dad to teenagers, I'm acutely aware of the people who are in their circle of influence who are really pouring into them. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, we haven't done the picture thing, but I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. Because we are trying to identify who are these people who we see who mm-hmm. we would love to have influence over our kid. And we had Karen Newhoff on the podcast recently, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how with his boys, he was super intentional mm-hmm. and would pay for them to go out and have dinner together, and told the mentor, the influencer, these are the three things I want you to talk about with my son over the course of this year.
So he was especially intentional. I know in the transition from childhood to adulthood in those years, right, when they turned like 11 or 12, into leaning into those adults, especially in that kind of milestone transition to say, help my kid learn, you know, teach my son what it means to be a man. I'm going to be a part of the conversation. Would you be a part of the conversation?
Yeah,
he definitely did such a phenomenal job. And for church leaders, I would also say your goal is to make sure one picture in that frame is your volunteer.
Mm.
If you got every kid to know, because what if every single person who walked in your church, your main objective was to give that kid the gift of another adult that they could name and say, this person knows me, they care about me, my ups and my downs, they're in it with me. And what a gift to every parent to go, we have given you, you know, single mom, struggling family, we've given you the gift of another adult in your kid's life who'll say the same kind of things you would want said to them.
That is such an incredible, I've never heard that before. But I love that as a vision for student ministry leaders and anybody who's in kid ministry. Like, that's fantastic. Do you see that happening very often in churches?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of churches who are trying. I think it's hard. You know, sometimes as a church, you can get discouraged because you're going, I'm supposed to recruit 10 volunteers and I've only got five. Or, you know, they said that this small group thing was going to be incredible, but I've got situations that I didn't anticipate. And it's easy to get discouraged, but it's worth the fight. Yeah. It is so worth the fight. We hear story after story after story where lives are completely changed when you don't give up fighting for this one thing.
Yeah. We get so caught up in church world, focusing on Sunday, right?
Right.
And the programs that have to go out, is the photocopying done, or all the equipment boxes together, et cetera, et cetera. But this really takes it out of that Sunday arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that idea. So is there a resource that you would send church leaders to help with this sort of idea?
Sure. For a church leader, I would give them Lead Small Culture.
Okay.
It was a book that we wrote a few years ago to say, all right, what do we mean when we say recruit a consistent adult in a kid's life? What does that look like practically? How does that affect everything from the way that you put up your church calendar, think about your programming, go about organizing and structure, to how do you recruit and train that volunteer, to how do you measure whether or not it's working effectively.
Yeah.
All that's right there in Lead Small Culture.
Yeah. And what about from a parenting point of view? Is there something you would recommend that I read to help with this?
So we have, we wrote a little bit about the idea of tribes in the book Playing for Keeps and how that connects a kid to belonging.
Yeah.
And then also, honestly, just the pages that we put into the phase guides, they're really simple, and you could do this without getting the resource. It would really just be that challenge to go name them. What if once a year you paused and went, who are they?
Yeah.
Can I write down their names? And what can I do to celebrate and encourage and strengthen that relationship? And honestly, to not feel threatened by it.
Yeah.
It's easy for me as a parent to go, wait, like, why are they connecting with fun Aunt Lauren and not me, and feel threatened by that relationship, rather than going, you know what, my kids are going to need to have a fun Aunt Lauren on the days that, like, we've hit a wall relationally, it's tense, I have to be mom in this situation, so that means I can't be what they need. Just to identify it and be open to it and say, nope, I'm going to cheer on the other relationships in my kid's life.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is, as parents, this often gets overlooked as well. We need to have a plan for this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we are going to hit those walls, and we need to have those go-tos.
Well, and sometimes just to say, if you can't talk about this with me, who can you talk to?
Yeah.
Write down that name so that
That's
I know
really
I'm not going to be so worried that you're not talking to me about this, because I know who you are going to talk to, and I know they're going to give you good advice. They're going to say the right things.
Yeah. I'm wondering, just to take it one step further, do you think that parents and leaders, church leaders, need to have those five influences around them at any given moment as well?
Now you're getting personal.
Well, it's true, right?
It's
I know
true.
That I, when
true.
I've hit a wall yes. as a dad, I've texted yes. you and said, hey, can you give me help?
Now, this, you may say this is not true and it's fine. Sometimes I find that ministry leaders can be, not always, but can be some of the loneliest on the planet.
Yeah, totally.
Because we have such high expectations of them. And I don't think this is what you intended for the conversation on this podcast to be, but it can be hard as a church leader to find a community that you can be authentic with and real with and feel like you can belong and show your true colors to, because there are expectations on our ministry leaders to be, to be pure and to be high level and next caliber and all that. And I do think it's dangerous for any person, because we're humans.
Yeah.
Even if we're called to ministry, we're still human.
Yeah.
To live in a glass house and not have a few people that really know you.
Yeah. Kristen, this wasn't where we're going to go with this podcast, but I think it's super important, because I have no doubt there are ministry leaders listening to this in their car right now who can totally understand exactly what you're saying, because they feel lonely.
Yeah. And it may be that there's not somebody at your church that's going to be that for you. But every ministry leader needs it, because every person needs it. Somebody you can call and you can go, look, life is harder than I thought.
Yeah.
This is really where I am. I just need somebody to know me so that I can start working through this in the light where there's full disclosure with it. It's not just all hidden.
Yeah. That's one of the things I love most about being on tour, on the Orange Tour here, is seeing all these kids ministry leaders come together. Mm-hmm. And it's like a family reunion or something, because you can see it in some of their faces. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not alone. I'm not in this alone. That's one of the things that I think Orange Tour does, which maybe doesn't get advertised as much.
Yeah, that's why we love the tour. Honestly, I think Orange Conference is like this huge kind of party. We get to celebrate together. We laugh together. We cry together. It's like you look around the room and you're like, oh my goodness, there's great people in the world doing good things. And you feel amped up, ready to, you know, take on the next year. But Orange Tour is a lot more intimate, relational. You get to know, really, really know each other. And so it's become part of my year that I look forward to going, we're going to go back to, you know, wherever, in, you know, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, or somewhere in Iowa. But you get to know the people and go, I know you, I know your church.
Yeah.
It's just a fun connection.
And it's just about reminding them, like you said, they're not alone.
You're not alone.
It's funny. I'd written down, go and buy 3 picture frames with 5 photos in it. Now I'm going to buy 5, because I think I need one and my wife needs one. And I would urge everybody who's listening to this, go out and buy that 5 photo picture frame and put the pictures in there with people who are influencing you as well.
And don't be discouraged if there's not 5.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think to have... It can be discouraging. I mean, I remember one point trying to do this and going, I can't name 5.
Yeah.
But if you can name 2, that's something. And then you know, hey, I've got these 2, and maybe there's a 3rd that I could identify.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Kristen, thank you so much for giving some of your time. I know that you're very busy while you're on tour and you've got lots of speaking things, but I always enjoy my conversations with you. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today.
Thank you. This is fun. Traveling Bunker.
Well, hey, that was fantastic. What I loved about that interview was, first of all, the fact that I got to sit there and actually enjoy the conversation between Dave and Kristen in real time. So yeah. One thing I walked away with, Dave, I don't want to share it straight away, is the idea of us saying, if I'm willing to be open to other influences in the lives of my child, then if my eyes might be open to the people who already have influence, and instead of me either rowing against them, right against the tide, I can bring them in and we can become a united front saying, love my child too. You love my child too. What if we all come together and we think about how we can support one another and be eyes and ears
I totally agree.
One another? Because there are things that we just know. I mean, even at a young age as toddlers, Arden acts different with me than she does with her mother.
Yeah.
And then together, she acts different.
Yeah.
Not necessarily bad or good, just different.
Yeah.
Right? She might whine a little bit more with her mother because she feels like mom will nurture her.
Yeah.
And with me, she might want to wrestle and tumble more because she knows I don't mind, you know, getting on my hands and knees and kind of wrestling around. And so some of those things show up even in the lives of those who have influence. Yeah. I thought that was pretty compelling for me. So what kind of stood out to you?
You know what, man? This was just a reminder to me that successfully raising an adult doesn't happen by chance. It happens by choice. That happens when we as parents make the decision to pursue, chase down, encourage, support those five key adults in our kids' lives who can say the things that maybe we can't say. You know, I love that Kristen said by that, do you remember when she said by the frame, the five people frame, and put that up somewhere and celebrate those people and pray for those people. And say, dude, I've gone straight out and I'm looking already for frames that will feature five photos so that I can put those in. And I've already had conversations with my teenage girls about what that would mean, who those people are, and starting to be very intentional about that. I don't know if you remember when we had Karen Newhoff on a few episodes back, and he talked about how he did this with his children as well. Again, it's just one of those things where I love that everything just, all this podcast always just pulls from past material and it all intersects. And if you haven't seen the Karen Newhoff, or if you haven't listened to the Karen Newhoff episode, we'll make sure to include that in the show notes as well, because that's really key. But that idea of celebrating those five people and having them and being intentional about that. I want to say that thing one more time. Raising successful adults doesn't happen by chance. It happens by choice. That was my big takeaway.
Well, first of all, that's incredible. And I also got out of that idea was that doesn't end the idea of the five.
Yeah.
I thought about me and said, you know, and I'm speaking, and I don't know for other people, but it is so easy for me to get caught up in fulfilling my obligations as a husband, as an employee and a teammate, as a dad, that I stop being intentional about who's around me.
Mm.
And I look up and I can say, I've been really blessed. And that's the only way to say that, truly, Dave. Like, even you and me and our friendship that we've developed, I can't say that was intentional.
Yeah,
I can just say, man, I'm so blessed that God allowed a person like Dave in my life right now, because it could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
And so that's a big part of it, saying, but what if I took the same intentionality with myself and said, I need to always have five.
That's so good. Because you're a part of a tribe as well.
Absolutely.
And you as an adult need to belong. And so I would encourage, if you're a student, especially student, I think in the student ministry world, we can often feel like we're maybe alone, maybe battling through stuff on our own and doing things solo. But, you know, you belong to people. You belong to a tribe. And there are people like, you know, what we're trying to do with our podcast. We're trying to help you create that sense of belonging and know that you're part of a community and part of a family.
Absolutely. And if you're a student leader, if you are really with any age group, preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, preteen, this is an answer for you.
Yeah.
Right? You can now say, I no longer should even attempt to have the pressure on me that it's their mom, their dad, and me.
Yeah.
Actually, you should be like, okay, well, we believe in small groups, so that should already be one person.
Yeah.
We believe that small groups should have two small group leaders.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, right? So that there's two small group leaders, even in a group of seven boys or seven girls.
Yeah.
So there's two. But that small group leader and you as a leader and your church would say, how can I either, first of all, arm parents with this concept, one. Two, how can I keep my eyes open for other ministries that they may be involved with? So, for example, Dave, I know one of your girls volunteers with media.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whoever's leading that media team, if they have a connection, you're like, you know what? that person, I'm going to observe how that relationship develops.
Yeah.
Because that could be another part of the five.
I totally agree. That's so good.
And so sometimes it's just saying, hey, let me look at where the kids in the ministry are engaging, so I can say to the parent or small group leader, hey, guess what? That kid's really connecting with that particular person in the other ministry when they volunteer in the preschool ministry or elementary ministry. Keep your eye on that, because that might be something we should tell their parent about, so the parents know there are other positive voices and that the parent can lean into that opportunity.
Love it. That's so good, Kevin. This has been an incredible episode. I can't thank you enough, Kevin, for being my co-host today. It's been fantastic to have you in the bunker with us.
I'm no Ashley, but I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Ashley has actually been super busy. She's out actually buying my birthday present, because it's my birthday this week. So she's doing that. And credit to her for making me a priority. I'm very pleased.
You know what? That's what friends do.
Yeah, but I noticed you're in here and you didn't.
My priority was to be I'm given the gift of presence.
Oh,
you know, like, I don't know if you read love languages, but that's a dialect.
You've made me feel like I belong today.
You do belong.
Hey, we hope that
you are not alone.
Boom, there it is.
Woohoo! I did it. I got it in.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Hey, thanks so much for being part of the Think Orange podcast today. As always, if you could subscribe to this, if you want to review this, if you want to share this, we would so appreciate that. And we make all of that so easy. All you need to do is check out our show notes. If you've got any questions that you would like to ask us, or maybe content ideas for 2018, make sure you go to thinkorangepodcast.com. You'll see that there's a contact form there, and we personally read every single contact form that comes in. So please take a moment and let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Let us know whether or not you want Kevin to keep singing and co-hosting, and if you like the jingle that we've created for him when he interjects. But especially if you've got ideas of things that you would like us to discuss, people you would like to have us interview and have on the show, please let us know. Go to thinkorangepodcast.com. Kevin, let's sign it off this week. Once again, as we always do, whenever you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.